Blog Talk Radio.
To all the listeners of the Wise Women Media Radio Show, we want to thank you for stopping by to listen in for yet another week. We also want to thank our sponsors for making it possible for us to be on the air. Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Hoodooed, Power New Media and the Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos. Thanks to the network at Here Be Monsters. And we also want to remind people that you can find us online at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com and hit us up at the WePay link right under our list of sponsors so you can help keep us on the air every week. We want to welcome back Flash Silvermoon to our radio show. She's been on before, and she's got a complete different topic to talk about tonight. always engaging and always the Renaissance woman. Flash, you're with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. Flash has decided to write an e-book that she's actually put on sale at her website, flashsilvermoon.com, and it was about a relationship between her and the great Janis Joplin. And Flash, tell us how this has come about and why, after 40 years, did you decide to write about this?
Well, for one thing, the reason I thought tonight's the night to do this show, when you said, hey, what do you want to do? It's going to be Janice's birthday at midnight. When this show goes off, it'll be her birthday, January 19th, 1943.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. Yeah, that's why I said let's do Jan's tonight.
So she would have been 60. No, she would have been 70 years old.
Yeah.
70 years old tonight.
And that's
wow,
awesome.
That's amazing. So it was very serendipitous, I must say.
Yes, it really was, because I was thinking yesterday, how will I celebrate her birthday? And what do you know, the goddess always has an idea about things. And when you said, what do you want to do? I'm thinking, well, you know, there's the tarot cards and I'm working with the horses. And then, wait a minute, it's Janice's birthday almost, and by midnight it will be. We're going to talk about my relationship with Janice, which I waited 40 years, really, because it began, the psychic part began when I was only 20 years old. And I was a little baby psychic, and her spirit essentially dumped me into the deep end of the cosmic soup. And the things that I learned so quickly, no one would have believed me at the time. And I also never wanted people to think I was trying to build a reputation off of her.
Yeah, like
on anybody.
Her coattails.
Yeah. I just didn't want to use her in that way. And so I waited till I had my own reputation. And what's funny, though, as I was writing it, I sort of figured I would just write down all these very fascinating stories, which they are, and I'll share some. But I figured, you know, I would just write them all down and then, you know, print them up. But as I was writing, she started talking to me again. And I'm a much better medium now than I was when I was 20 and 30 years old. So
right.
It was got pretty.
We all improve over, you know, over age, and
yes.
And that's for certain, sure. And the messages between us and the cosmos are definitely more clear than they were when we were younger. I'm approaching cronehood. It's not a clue by four anymore. It's if you're carrying on a relationship with the goddess, the messages become clearer and clearer as we age.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And I was so young. I was only 20 years old when she died. Let me backtrack a minute, because I actually did physically meet Janice. I'm a musician, and I loved her. And the first time I ever heard her, something in me just said, I know I'm supposed to play this kind of music, and I am playing this kind of music, but this is where I'm headed. And I just knew it. The first time I saw her jump on the stage and whirl around, and she hit me like nobody else. And I actually walked into her dressing room quite by mistake, if there are anything such as mistakes. And it was the end of a concert in New Jersey, and I had a tad bit of herb in my system, and hence the mistake.
Right.
And I walked through her door, and thinking I was going out the back door, and there she was standing. She had just finished, and she was dripping wet, and I just, like, my mouth dropped open, and I walked over to her. She had been playing with the James Cotton Blues Band, and those guys were all around. And I just grabbed her arm and I said, you are so, so wonderful. And I just looked at her and I was just like in awe. And she could see that. She says, well, here, have a drink. And she hands me a Dixie cup, a rather large one, filled with some kind of alcohol. And I'm not a drinker. And I thought, oh, it's Southern Comfort, which I could just about handle because it was sweet. So mm-hmm. I'm drinking with Janice. So I'm going to be a big girl. Turned out to be a big fool. I take the whole glass and I down it in one big mouthful. And predictably, I was doubled over coughing in a second because I'm not a drinker. And
right.
I think she had the best laugh she had all night, watching me choke, and she was slapping me over the back and laughing her ass off. So that was the physical meeting. But what happened was that she died on October 3rd, 1970. And I was never satisfied with what the first report about her death was. They said she was found with a split lip and a broken nose, and there was no drugs and no paraphernalia. She had 450 clutched in her hand that was changed from a $5 bill that she had gotten at the hotel lobby. I forget at the moment the name of the dive she was staying in, but so no foul play, no drugs, no paraphernalia. She's got a split lip and a broken nose, and they said she must have fallen off the bed. Well, you and I know it's going to take a lot more than falling off a bed, especially if you're drunk and bouncy.
Yeah.
To break your nose. I've come in off a wave in the ocean, nose first into the sand, and I didn't break it.
What's really interesting about her website is, and they've been doing these on musicians' websites, and I think they're absolutely remarkable as far as technical and creative imaging on a website. But I was looking at Chaka Khan's website the other day, and
wow.
She has thing. It's a timeline that's a static timeline, and it goes horizontal. So when you click into it, you can click and see which days they were doing what concerts they're doing. So if anybody ever wants to follow along, you can go to janisjoplin.com and actually look at the website. But the last couple of days of her life...
She was recording Pearl.
Yeah, she was recording, and she was busy, and she was full of life. So I found it unusual that anybody would even think that she had committed suicide or was doing anything out of the normal that would take her away from the music, because she seemed like she was pretty driven when it came to the music.
Yes.
So on October 3rd, it says, Janis Joplin, and this is October 3rd, 1970, Janis Joplin visits Sunset Studios to listen to the instrumental track for the song Buried Alive in the Blues prior to recording her vocal track, which is scheduled for the next day. So then you flip in to the next day, which is October 4th, 1970. So sometime during the 3rd and the 4th, she was gone. She left this earth plane. So on the 4th, it says, Janis Joplin is scheduled to return to Sunset Studios to record vocals on Buried Alive in the Blues. One verse reads, all caught up in a landslide, bad luck pressing in from all sides, just got knocked off my easy ride, buried alive in the blues. And that's the day she died.
Well, that song is written by a guy named Nick Cravenitis.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't write that, but he was writing it for her. The last song she recorded, and this is really freaky, was Mercedes-Benz. And if you listen to the end of that, she sings it, and then she laughs, and she goes, that's it. And that was it.
Yeah, she does. Exactly.
That was it.
I remember that. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? Because that song actually got airplay, you know.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones that you didn't listen to on the, you know, all night clear channel radio stations. Mercedes-Benz actually hit, you know, the top 40, which was unusual.
Wow.
Her death was recorded October 4th, 1970, but as you and I know, that probably happened that night, the 3rd. Janis Joplin
really
was found dead of a drug overdose at the Landmark Hotel. There
yes,
it is.
Yes, the Landmark.
In Los Angeles at the age of 27 by her road manager, John Cook. So they found her that following morning. And I think the $5, wasn't the $5?
It was
she got the
four
back in a pack of cigarettes or something
yeah.
from the hotel lobby.
Yep, the desk clerk.
Right. So it was significant that she was okay. She wasn't in a drunken stupor. She wasn't, you know, hitting up the drugs any heavier than she would have been normally. And she was driven to do this recording because she had a deadline to get the tracks laid down. So go ahead and elaborate a little bit more about what you envision and what you see in regards to her very early demise. It's just, and it's, you know, I find it very frightening, too, that two other greats died within those several months.
Oh, yes.
That same year. And,
of course,
I got
a lot of ideas about that.
Yeah, and we know those two, of course, were Jimi Hendrix, who died in London, and Jim Morrison, who actually spent time living in my hometown of Clearwater, Florida. So yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. But tell me what you envision about those last hours that Janis had.
Well, let me explain how I even got clued into this. I mean, I had some ideas immediately after she died, but I'm going to fast forward again to what I was shown. It was like as soon as Pearl was released, I had it, and I was listening to it, and the song Cry Baby came on, which was not my favorite or anything, but somehow in the middle of that song, I wound up going into a trance. I was somewhere else, and suddenly I see blood everywhere. I hear a scream. I see a tumble, and I see the most hideous-looking man. I'd probably be able to recognize him if I ever saw him. He had a shaved head and the most hideous eyes, and it was like just seconds, but I knew what I was being shown in an instant. And I'd never talked to dead people before. I was just a budding psychic. But
mm-hmm.
she opened that door real wide, and I could see and I could feel what she wanted me to know, which was, and continued to be for months after that, I didn't kill myself. I was murdered. This is who did it. And she was very emphatic. And even though I was so new at all this, I knew that I had to be careful not to let her take my body and keep it.
Right.
You know, I knew that because I was so new that I'd have to be aware and to have some boundaries. And this is pretty tricky since I didn't know how to do this stuff in particular. But I was going to learn real, real fast because I had to. And the next night, another friend was over, and he came over, and he wasn't much of a psychic at all. He was just a hippie. And we were listening to Pearl again, and the song comes on, and all of a sudden, he goes into a trance. And he starts mumbling the very same things that I told no one about. And he tells me about this man at the top of the stairs, throwing someone down. And I said, tell me how he looks. What does he look like? And he described the same guy I saw. And I had told no one. So I thought,
wow.
Well, okay, there's something here. There's something here to know about. So going back to when I first heard that she died. Of course, I was absolutely, I was blown away. But the first thing that came into my head, which I thought for a little while and kind of let go of and now believe more than ever, was that she was assassinated. And the thing is, when you have druggies who are, you know, musicians, and they're into the drugs and the alcohol, it's very easy to make something look like an overdose. What I know for sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt, is that she did not kill herself, and that someone else either killed her or just meant to hurt her, to shake her up, but she wound up dying because she had a lot of alcohol in her system, and she was shot up with very pure heroin. And I've seen, you know, the death notice and all that, and, you know, she did die of a combination of heroin and alcohol. Had she not had all the alcohol, the heroin might not have killed her, but it did.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting because after that happened, I wound up having opportunities to talk to people who would know things about her. And this went on for a good 2 years at least, including the author, Myra Friedman, a person I was teaching piano lessons to. I just happened to mention Janice, and she says to me, "Well, you know, Flash, Myra Friedman, who wrote Buried Alive, is right down in the hallway. You know, share a drink with her or two. She'll tell you whatever you want to know." And I thought, I think I'll do that. And we wound up having a nice chat for a couple of hours. And, you know, she confirmed that, yes, she died that way, but she didn't know anything about murders or homicides or anything like that. But what we have to look at here is the fact that since that time, and this is kind of nice also on the edge of Martin Luther King Day, since that time, we have not had the musicians of that quality, of Janis and Jimmy and Morrison and John Lennon. We have not had musicians of that caliber or leadership of the caliber of Martin and Malcolm X and the Kennedys. We haven't had anything like that. There was like a spiritual and social, political coup d'etat brewing. Things were trying to change.
I've read so much about the deaths of Janis and Jimmy and Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix. And so much has pointed to the actual music industry themselves.
Yes.
Being the culprits. And in other words, when they got to the point, when they, whoever they are, got to the point where they didn't believe that the artist could do their craft anymore or perform and make the same amount of money, if they judged that the artist became a liability, then it was time to off them. And by off them, I mean, you know, kill them and move on to another artist that would be newer, fresher, and able to bring in the millions and now billions of dollars that are required by these.
Well, we've seen that with Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston, haven't we?
Yeah, and I'm looking at those. Those are just two recent ones.
Right.
But there's so many more in between those two and back, you know, with these three back in 1970, which would have been, the fall of 1970 for the three of them. So we have a lot, you know, a lot to think about, a lot to surmise, and, of course, a lot of finger-pointing, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, without any
kind
of...
One thing you might not know.
Yeah, and this is just it. We might not know ever while we're on this earth plane about exactly how all that happened. But
well, let me share with you a little bit about Janice and Columbia Records.
Okay.
I didn't know this, but someone, I had just started to post about this book, and a guy got in touch with me out of the blue, and it was just interesting how that all transpired. But the piece he gave me, which I didn't have, was about the fact that Janice was the first person, male or female, who went up against Columbia Records and produced her own record. She got a hold of Pearl, and she said, no, I don't want your producers. I don't want your people behind the dials. I want to do it myself, and she did. This had never been done.
She was the first one, and, of course, you know, that led to many other females doing the same thing. And, you know, Annie DeFranco comes to mind. You know, she was Annie DeFranco.
Yes, so many years later.
Yeah, so many years later, but she's just one example where she said, you know, excuse the French, screw this music industry that's trying to control me and my art, and I'm just going to produce my own thing and do it myself, and I'll learn enough about the industry where I don't need them, and I can do it on my own. And that's just an example of what's been happening since Janice. So I guess she set the standard for other women artists doing the same thing.
Yeah,
and other
there
artists.
Was nobody. There was not a single woman who made the same impact that she did. And, you know, when I play her music or I perform or even just talking about her, people will just pop up and say, she was so important to me. She was so special to me.
Yeah.
And she touched so many. And oddly, maybe 5-6 years ago, I've got a huge poster of her in my living room, right over my keyboards. And these two kids were mowing my lawn, and they came in and they saw that picture of her. And they look at me and they go, oh, is that you when you were younger? I said, don't you know who that is? No. You ever heard of Janis Joplin? No. Well, you need to know. And I told them a little about her and played her music. Now, you know, I don't look that much like her.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe the hair sometimes, but her hair was more of a brown and yours is red, so I don't understand
the connection.
Well, no, hers
was actually a bit red, too.
Is it?
Yeah, hers was a little bit red. But, you know, I do not physically look that much like her, but people have likened me to her, and I think it's a vibration thing. And as we talk about this, I'll explain a bit more about that.
Well, why don't I play this song that happens to be one of my favorites that you do, Savor You Like Chocolate. And, of course, my partner just the other day, Leon, called me a chocolate junkie. So so I thought that was kind of cute. And this song always reminds me of my fondness for chocolate. But, of course, it's an allegory about sensual love. So let's go ahead and play this song. Hang on.
Okay.
I wanna savor you.
So, yeah, the voice is similar, a lot similar, the same vibe, the same. It reminds me of several songs that are on the Pearl album where she really, on the Pearl album, I think Janis really went more mainstream than alternative for that time. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on that? Is that how you would analyze that last album of Pearl?
Gosh, I wouldn't have thought of it as mainstream particularly at all. I would call it cleaner, better produced.
Yeah.
Right. It got very muddy with the Cosmic Blues Band, you know, the horns and everything.
And then she went towards the end, she went with the Full Tilt Boogie Band.
The Full Tilt Boogie Band was her best band.
I think so, too.
You know, I mean, the first band, Big Brother and the Holding Company, I've seen her with every one of her bands. And the time that I actually met her, she was traveling with the Cosmic Blues Band, and I wound up having a milkshake in the Howard Johnson's with Snooky Flowers, the big Afro sax guy. The whole band actually came in, and it's a pretty funny story how that evolved. But the music, I thought, on Pearl, she had hit her peak and could only have gotten better and better. The band was better. Her relationship with them, it was all just really clicking.
Recording techniques were better. I was wrong on that date, too, that I mentioned before. They didn't all... Jim and Janis did not all die within that one fall, late summer,
no,
early...
No, Jimmy was the first, I think it was 27th of September.
It was, I got it right here, actually. It was the 18th of September, 1970. So that would have been the very next week, or the very next month, Janis was gone. But Jim
she
Morris...
died on the 4th. Yeah.
Right, and then Jim Morrison didn't leave this earth plane until July 3rd, 1981.
Yeah.
So it was all the way into the next year, but it was, I think, relatively speaking to all this, I think the music industry had not experienced, especially in the United States, anything like rock stars of this status. The Brits
True.
Had already been through it with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Right.
They were having their rock star personas. But I don't think the music industry here in the United States had experienced something that had eclipsed these three people, Janis, Jimmy, and Jim. So for some kind of foul play to occur, I think people at the top understood how much money was to be made, and they weren't going to do anything that would jeopardize that unless they figured that the artist was not going to, was going to be a liability, is probably what I'm trying to say. But for you to say that Pearl was at her peak as far as creating music,
absolutely.
Why would they want to eliminate her? So that to me doesn't make any sense. Did you sense anything else from that, or is that secret?
Oh yeah, I mean,
the
there's so much to this.
Uh huh.
My very first thought, and I mean, when she first started communicating with me, and it was like having a roommate after a while. Fortunately, I was not afraid of it. But she was furious, needless to say. She was red-hot angry and raving, and it seemed like murder. Then I started thinking that it might not have meant to be murder, but it might have meant to be, at the very least, it was absolutely intentional to shake her up and frighten her.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was malintent there, if not literal murder. And
so maybe it was meant to shake her up, but it wasn't meant to kill her. But then again, something happened that went beyond the shaking up, and she ended up dying anyway. So that's that's a possibility. It was just something that was meant to shake her up that went completely wrong.
Yes.
Or awry.
Yeah, that's a for sure. But what I did get, I mean, when she started communicating again, she actually did a blow-by-blow. And the person who killed her, she knew. She didn't know well, but she was someone, the person who did this to her was someone around her, peripheral.
Yeah, within her crew or whatever.
Yeah.
Her crew of people, whether they were her actual music crew or just the crew that was of hangers-on.
Well, he wasn't music crew. He wasn't.
Yeah.
Famous. He was a drug dealer.
So tell our listeners how her music has influenced yours, and how actually having a communication with her has improved and enlightened what you do.
Well, my plan, as it were, for life was to go full tilt as into the rock and roll business. And I was certainly headed that way. She might very well have been trying to protect me, because she has saved my life 3 times in my life that I know about, and I will tell you about one of them. She has influenced me as a musician, of course, first and in the beginning, and, you know, just someone who was real. And I take her quote, "Don't compromise yourself. It's all you've got," as something I live by. And just her persona was really something on the positive parts of it that influenced all women, I think, in rock and roll. And I just was swept away by the magic of her. And it really encouraged me to go towards my music even stronger, even harder, and in a very uncompromising way. But the continued spiritual contact pulled me further and further into my own spirituality in developing my own psychic abilities, which just started mushrooming away. The more I was in contact with her, the more I could see this other world, and I couldn't possibly say this doesn't exist, which I wasn't inclined to do anyway, but it was just like more proof. And daily I got better. And when I was writing this, when I actually was writing this, what I started to tell you before, when she started talking to me again, I was shocked. And I just jumped straight up out of my chair as I was typing at the computer. And I just said, "Well, now what? I thought I had this all together as to what was going to happen with this. Now what do I do with this?" And she just said, "Use me. Don't be afraid. Use me. I want you to." I said, "Well, okay." And, you know, that was her message a couple of times while I was working. In the very, very beginning, her message was so strong that she wanted everybody to know, "I didn't kill myself. Someone did this to me." And would not have been hard at all. She could not have been found the way she was found and someone not have done it to her. She didn't batter herself. And
right.
It's interesting because the reports about her passing did not talk about this bloody nose and split lip after the first couple of days. That was wiped out of the news reports. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, as so much happens to the news nowadays, it's kind of
back then it was actually a little bit more truthful.
Yeah, very, very few people get the story behind the story, but there is always a story behind the story, and especially now, since we have corporate-owned news sources. That's all they are. I mean, they're beholden to the advertisers,
absolutely,
not to publishing the truth. So, so we only get what we're told, and that is usually not the truth.
We had a cultural annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mao did a cultural revolution, and he took out all the leaders and all the cultural heroes. And that happened here. We haven't had it like that since.
Right.
I was at Woodstock. I was 10 feet from the stage. I know what it felt like. I know what the energies were about. And it was no exaggeration. It was as beautiful, if not more, than anyone could have ever depicted. You had to be there, as they say. But I've been tremendously influenced to look beyond what is shown to me and to be more engaged with the spiritual life. I still do my music, and I realized that on the day-to-day, I preferred the life of a psychic, astrologer, and animal communicator to the life of a rock musician in a club on the day-to-day.
Right.
But music is so magical and meaningful to me. It was my first love, and it's still the siren that pulls me places. And for me, music is as easy as breathing. What you heard, I mean, I wrote everything, and I played all the instruments, and I produced it and arranged it. And, you know, music is very, in some ways, very, very easy for me.
Now, how did you get started writing the book? I mean, was there some kind of communication that just drove you to start putting all this down on paper, or did you feel driven to do it?
I felt driven to do it. That's how I work, you know. Whatever it is I'm doing, whether it's putting together the Wise Women Festival or or writing a book or being on a radio show, it's like, okay, show me what I'm supposed to do. Put me where I belong. And I started getting such a strong feeling. That summer was the summer of 40 years that Woodstock had been.
Right.
And I thought, as I was writing about that, I was like, okay, you've waited a long time to do this. You didn't want to be seen as someone using her or, you know, using a celebrity of any kind to make a name for yourself. So now you've got your own reputation, and it's time. It's 40 years later. It's time. And I saw something on TV, too, I think on one of those shows that does biographies. And they had done a biography of her. And it was pretty good. And it showed a lot of the stuff about her family, which was the torment of her life, really. That was the really hard place for her. Port Arthur, Texas. And what went on there with her early years. And, you know, kind of continued as a thread with her and her family. They didn't understand her. They didn't get her. You know, she was a diamond, you know, born into a family of coal, you know. And she knew it. She didn't know it at first, but then she knew it. And she had to get away, and she did. And it was going back there for her, the reunion, the high school reunion.
Yeah,
I
saw that on the timeline at the very end. It was, I think it was, what, within a week or something after?
Yes.
Or right before her death. I'm actually going back to the timeline now so I can take a look at that. But
on the biography TV program, Myra Friedman was quoted as having talked to the mother, and the mother had told her during that visit that, "I wish you were never born."
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
That's very cold.
Was doing Yeah, Janice was doing very well at that time. And she went back anyway, back to doing Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing very, very well. But she was starting to have, you know, a drop in her energy, I think. I think it was starting to get to her. There, she'd been dented. She'd been wounded from being back in Port Arthur. And I think the man that she was thinking she was going to marry might have been starting to look not so great. And so things in her life were starting to teeter. But she still had her music, and she was going to kick butt with it. You know, just a lot of different energies were conspiring along that time. And I looked at it astrologically, too, which I talk about in the book. I go through her chart and some of the transits that were happening during that time to try to understand what went so wrong. And
was she going through possibly a Saturn return, and it was just too much to handle? There was other stuff going on?
It's in the book, and I don't remember exactly. Well, she died at 27, and a Saturn return technically begins at 28.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that, if it would start a little bit early or
no,
whatever.
It starts pretty much at 28. And she was Capricorn's sun, and she had a Cancer moon. That's why she really got to your heart. That's
mm-hmm.
where you got all the depth of emotion. Her rising sign was Aquarius.
Which
and
made her
very unconventional. So
unconventional and appealing to the world view and not to her home view. So she needed to be accepted by the community at large, which would have been, you know, people into music and rock music, and that was her people.
Yeah, the Aquarius fit very well. She also had Mercury in Aquarius, and I think Venus in Aquarius. But that Capricorn, you know, the Capricorn part ruled by Saturn, wanted to fit in, wanted
mm-hmm.
to be loved and accepted by the family, by the school, by the regular people of Port Arthur. And that was not going to happen.
Wow.
You know, that was just not going to happen for her. And, you know, the Aquarian part of her plowed on and didn't act like things were getting to her. But that Cancer moon felt it all.
Yeah. Now, I'm going up to, I was trying to go back to her timeline, and it looks like she had quite a few really incredible concerts those last months. She had gone to Hawaii. She had been on the Dick Cavett Show for the third time.
That was a good show.
She was actually at the funeral. In 68, she was at the funeral. She performed for Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. And
wow.
She played played with Jimi Hendrix, Buddy Guy, Joni Mitchell, Richie Havens, Paul Butterfield, and Elvin Bishop.
How interesting.
The wake for Martin Luther King Jr., that was on April 7th, 1968, and it was in New York. But as you go back into those last months of 1970 of her life, she had some pretty life-changing things happening as she was. Like I said, she had done the reunion, the school reunion. She was on Dick Cavett. He really gave her, three times she was on his show.
Yep.
Altogether.
He liked her a lot.
Yeah, he really, really liked her, and he liked having her on. And then there was several other really, really big events. And, you know, there was no reason for her, unless it was purely emotional, to want to do herself in, because there was just
but
too much.
But she didn't do herself in. It didn't happen.
Well,
it
I'm
never
saying,
happened.
Not the story. Even though they gave us that story, we have to know from what she did that the real story is something that has not been gone out of the news. It's not gone out in the media. She had started with her band in 1970, the Full Tilt Boogie Band, which, as you said before, was the best band.
Absolutely.
She had done a week-long thing in Canada. She went
on
to Hawaii
train.
Right after that. She did...
There's a movie about that train thing. They went through Cavalry on
right.
a train with the Grateful Dead and the band and a few others.
Who
good
is
movie.
Ken Steele?
I'm
because
sorry?
It says she went home to Austin or went back to Texas on July 10th, 1970. She performed at a birthday celebration for Ken Threadgill in Austin.
Okay, yeah, that's the bar where she first started playing.
Okay. And then there was, she was with the Grateful Dead. She was on her last appearance. She went to a Festival of Peace. There were a whole bunch of different... Oh, and what was really interesting, she provided a headstone for the grave of Bessie Smith, her primary
niece. That's right.
Who was buried
yep.
in Philadelphia's Mount Lawn Cemetery. And she did
yeah,
that
it really,
August.
It outraged her that Bessie Smith had no headstone.
Wow, that's wild.
That was one of the last things she did.
And her high school reunion was a week later at
yep.
Port Arthur, Texas, August
yep.
14th, 1970. So she had some pretty life-changing events going on. And then, of course, the following it was a little over 2 weeks later when she was recording at Sunset Studios for, you know, her last recording gig on the 3rd and 4th of October. So that was that. That was some pretty life-changing things and really things that would have revealed to many that were looking at them that she was at her peak form, at the very top.
She was. Absolutely.
She couldn't get any higher than that. So, you know,
well, she probably could have had she lived.
Yeah, had she lived, yeah. So tell us a little bit more about the book and how we can get the book and any other words of wisdom that she might want to be telling us right now.
Okay. Well, my website is flashsilvermoon.com, and right there, on the home page, you'll see there's a little section that says Janis Joplin and Me, 40 Years of Music and Magic. That's the title of the ebook, and it's only $9.95. And you send that into my Moon Market, and Zoom, you've got it on your computer in minutes. And I think you'll enjoy it, especially if you're a fan of that time of the late 60s. A lot of interesting stuff that goes into it. And I weave the story that I've been shown, really. Let me tell you about the night she saved my life. Are we doing with time?
Well, we can do as long as 2 hours, so I'm scheduled
okay.
literally for 2 hours. So whenever
okay.
you don't want to talk anymore, we can end the show.
Okay, well, let me tell you about how she saved my life. I was living in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I told myself it was that, but I think it was really more like the edge of Spanish Harlem, actually, truth be told. And my space that I was living in was kind of like camping with stairs. And I was up 4 flights, and I had tendonitis in my Achilles tendon. So I was on crutches. Living up 4 flights of stairs, was this a perfect time or what? And I had had a fight with Pandora, who was my partner at the time, and oddly, again, still is. And some of that recycling, too, made me want to write this. And we were having a disagreement. It was 4:30 in the morning. Oh, and Janice, there was a place in each place I've lived where she would show up. And I didn't see her, per se, but I could feel her and sometimes hear her. And I'd made this huge collage of her pictures because she loved collages. I actually gave her one the first time I met her for a minute. And so I had a big one over my sofa. And I'm just about to drift off to sleep. It's 4:30 in the morning. And I'm trying to wake her up because I think I'm smelling something in the house. I'm four flights up. And I think I smell smoke. Well, the reason I smell the smoke is because I hear a rustling in the living room as I'm about to fall asleep. And I say to myself, oh, it's only Janice. Janice, I wake up. I wouldn't want to miss a visit, you know. So I perk up, and I listen, and then I smell the smoke. And Pandora doesn't wake up, and I'm looking around. I'm looking in the garbage cans. Maybe someone put a lit cigarette in or whatever. I throw the door open from the apartment to the hallway, and it's full of smoke. And I'm too poor at this point to have a telephone. So I get on my crutches, and I wake everybody up in the apartment and start bumbling down the stairs trying to get everybody out of there to get down to make a phone call, which we do. And the cops come over, and they say, you know, whoever called this in saved everybody's life. This whole place was about to go up. The boiler was going to explode.
Wow.
Yeah. And had she not made that noise right then, I would have slipped off to sleep.
Yeah.
And that is the goddess honest truth.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And,
amazing.
You know, there's a couple more like that. And what she used to do, when I would be auditioning, she loved to play with me. I'd be sitting there playing a song, auditioning for a club, and she would shatter the glass of soda I'd have on the piano. Now, she wouldn't push it off and make it look like it fell because of the vibration. She'd shatter it in place. And this went on many, many times. Sometimes she'd make the glass sail across the room. And she'd always do stuff that people would go like, because it would always be in such a way that one would say, what the hell?
So she was making her presence known. There was no
doubt
about that.
I got very, very used to her playing with glass around me. At one point, I was having a talk with somebody, and we were talking about mystical things, and the right lens of my glass shattered in place.
That's
not
wild.
Both lenses didn't fall out. It shattered in the frame. And then I said to her, there's a spirit that's been fooling with me that likes to play with glass. And then I just spilled the whole story. And I said, you know, probably doing a seance would be a good thing. And
yeah, because it would open up those energies so she wouldn't feel like she had to express herself that way.
And at that point, I'd never done one before.
Yeah.
And she said, well, it's really interesting. I have a friend who can do them, but I haven't spoken to him in 6 months. Ring goes the phone. Guess who it is? The guy she hadn't talked to in 6 months. And I said,
wow.
Gulp. All right. I suppose that's how this stuff works. And you know that. So he calls in, and she says, would you be available to do a seance? We need to talk to Janis Joplin's spirit. And he said, yeah, let's do it this weekend. And so we did. And I gathered up a group of women. He was the only male there. I sat next to him. And one of the women in the circle, who had almost died of an overdose herself, started to go into an OD. And, you know, it was like she was living out the death. And the channel himself, his head went knocked into the table. And he didn't know very much about her death, and he got up at the end. He goes, boy, I feel like I broke my nose or something. And, of course, she had broken her nose or had it broken for her. I'm pretty sure she was thrown down some stairs.
Wow. So this is very, she's definitely kept up this communication with you since these times many years ago.
Yeah.
And what would you say she's saying about the music industry now or anything for that matter?
She's rolling over in her grave. But I think, you know, as I've understood things better, I think she's kind of lit a fire in me to not trust the stories that were given about the passing of some
right.
of our musical heroes. And, I mean, you know, already we all know about the Kennedys, and we know about Martin Luther King, and we know about Malcolm X. We know these people didn't just die the way we were told. We know that. But
right.
the music industry has somehow slipped through this, doing some of the same things, and most people don't have a clue.
Yeah, or they would call anybody that believes in that a conspiracy theory or mentally ill or whatever.
Right. And the thing about some of the theories is sometimes conspiracy theories are true.
I always say sometimes conspiracy theories are conspiracy facts.
Right.
So it's much easier for people to just say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, rather than go and look something up. It's really funny, on my own page just tonight, I got kind of in a sparring match with somebody who thinks that I should believe in documents that are written out by the CDC and the EPA about pollution, and called me mentally ill because I didn't believe in them.
Well, when
you're
little,
she's actually going other places.
Santa Claus.
Yeah, so she's actually going other places on Facebook, write to people's profiles that know me personally, and writing this kind of stuff out, that it's really, really very sad that I'm mentally ill.
Well, you know what Janice would say?
Mm.
And I don't know if we're supposed to use four-letter words or not.
Go right ahead if you want to express yourself.
Well, you know she'd probably tell you to tell them to fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know where this term came from, conspiracy theory, but it's just a term that discounts anything that the person that you're talking to does not want to believe in, whether it's true or not true, or whether it's researched or not researched. If that person doesn't want to believe in what you're saying, they can call you a conspiracy theory and call you, basically what they're saying is you're mentally ill for believing
yep.
the way you believe.
Well,
and
you know.
Very, very sick precedent as far as I'm concerned. And,
well, there's a whole lot more out there that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And, you know, it's like back then, we actually at least appeared to have a news media that was more honorable. And there was less people, there's less spin doctors. But still, you know, there were people being taken out.
Right.
And, you know, the positive stuff, though, that I've gotten from her has been amazing, just in terms of feeling the strength of her spirit. And the last time, well, not the last time, but one of the last times I had a very powerful experience was at the second Wise Woman Festival.
Tell me what happened there.
Well, we were playing music, and I always chose women musicians to play with me at the festival who are also very spiritual, so that we were not just playing music, of course, that was good enough, but we were also creating magic while we were at it. So performing with Omi Aladora Ajamu,
yes,
who is a priestess of Yemanja.
Right.
And then there's me and my priestess self, and then Kat, trying to remember the name of her band at the time. And she was quite the mystic. And we were singing Piece of My Heart. And particularly in that song, she starts to come through me. And I'm singing, and Omi kind of nudges me, and she says, "Flash, she's here. I can see her. She's way up. She's floating in like clouds up towards the ceiling, and she's singing through you. You know that, don't you?" I said, "Uh-huh." And the music that was coming through my body was so intense, I had to start holding on to my keyboard with one hand. And talking about rocking the house was rocking me. I mean, it was really intense. And as we kind of sang into those last notes of Piece of My Heart, and I was making my keyboard sound like an electric guitar and creating feedback, and that turned into a chant between me and Omi and Kat White Star. And the sounds were just, vroom, they were going around and around, and the people in the audience, it was no longer an audience, they created a circle. So now it was a circle, not a band and an audience. And we were holding hands and chanting and just taking our voices around those last notes, and it just turned into this outrageous sound and voice weaving of everybody weaving their voices together. And and Omi said,
I don't think I came to the second festival. I was at
the
first.
You were at the first.
I was at the first one, but it would have been nice to have been there for the second one.
That was probably one of my most magical moments ever, playing music.
Yeah,
ever.
I can imagine it would be. That's amazing. Yeah, every time I went, I missed whatever was going on Saturday night because I was doing something else, but because I was there during the workshop during the day, but the real jams were happening at night. So
that's when a lot of really intense magic was happening.
Yeah, right. So,
because the music was being played by priestesses.
Right, right. So it was music and magic together. So so tell us a little bit else. Maybe you can give us an update on some of the other things that you've been working on besides the book. And again, everybody that's listening, you can see more information about the book, and you can order it from Flash Silvermoon's website at flashsilvermoon.com. And if you scroll down on the site, you'll actually see the header for the book. New ebook, Janis Joplin and Me, 40 Years. Click into that, and it'll give you all the information. Can you give us an update on the situation in Marion County? We did cover it in our show last week.
Yeah.
About the miniature horses and the rape going on. Somebody's going in there and raping these miniature show horses. Is there any new news about that?
At the moment, there is not, but I have a feeling that I don't really want to reveal on the air about what I think is going to happen, but I do believe we're going to catch him. I do believe that his ego is not going to let him just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the type that wants to be able to put another notch, so to speak.
Yeah.
And to say, ha, you still don't have me. I think that that's a part of his emotional makeup. And I think he's a coward. You know, that's part of that. What has developed around the situation is an absolutely beautiful group of women who are working the Mercam. And the Mercam is a camera that focuses on the barns.
Right.
And it started because we all wanted to help. We wanted to make sure that this dude didn't come waltzing in again and take a horse and rape it. And out of something so ugly, so horrific, that most people didn't even want to look at the story, from something ugly,
yeah,
beauty is being created. A wonderful network of women who are really loving and caring for each other. And we've got a list. Okay, you're going to take these 2 hours. You're going to take these 2 hours. And, oh, I'm not feeling so good tonight. Well, honey, get your rest. You need your rest. I'll jump in. And, you know, it's just flowing. And it really reminds me. It's so interesting. January 1, we had a beautiful small group out by the grandmother tree. And we were talking about this new year, this new world that we're trying to birth. And that's really what's happening. No matter what it is you're doing, that's what we're trying to do, all of us in our own way. And we were discussing that, and the vibration was very high and very beautiful. And the next morning, 6 in the morning, I see on the news about this story of the rape of these precious horses. And at first I'm disgusted, and then I'm enraged, and then there's nothing that'll do for me but finding where this is and getting over there and healing the horses. And I knew it was for me to do. You know how sometimes you just know, that's my job.
Right.
And
it's
if you're
like
me,
you
go and do it.
Yeah, you're not directed to there either. It's just kind of like the whole thing comes to you. And it's a thing you can't ignore when it happens like that.
Yeah, so, I couldn't not do it.
Right. There's a lot of really, really good people that are, you know, there's our friend Ellen Powell,
right,
and all kinds of other really, really good women that I've met through Facebook that are assisting with this. And come to find out, you and Ellen also have a link to the past. Can you
yes,
tell us a little bit about that? Because like you said before, things don't happen by coincidence or by accident.
No.
So tell us a little bit about how you and Ellen connected through the Mercam situation.
Well, we're sitting around watching poor little Skinny, the mare, who still we're waiting for her to have her baby. And we've been, you know, watching over her night after night. And Ellen comes on, and she says, oh, yeah, I'm from Burlington, Vermont. And I say, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, when I was playing music out more, we toured through there, and I played at the mill in Burlington. She says, no, not the mill. Yeah, the mill. And she said, well, I played there, too, many, many times. And she sends me a picture on Facebook showing her playing with her band at the mill.
Right.
So it was a little bit of fun and irony. And
but you two hadn't at that time, but you were connected there by that place,
yes,
so to speak.
Yeah, and that was in 79. And that was my favorite gig on that whole tour, I think.
Yeah, musicians, all Ellen was telling me, she sent me that same picture when she found the picture somewhere and was able to, you know, I don't know if she got the rights to it, but she did forward it to people and posted it on her profile and
yep,
and was explaining what the mill was about and, you know, how much music had actually floated through that place, which
it was a
really
cool place. It really was.
Yeah. And she was definitely, you know, part of the scene at that time with her band, but now she's an adjunct music professor and teaches the bass at, what is it, the University of Vermont?
Probably.
So she's, you know, and still playing, and still playing after all these years. She's still doing that, too. So quite a talented, between her doing that and assisting with the Maricam and all of that, she's also really, very much an advocate for their local water issues up there in Vermont, too, so she stays pretty busy. But, go ahead.
Most of the women, most if not all, but I think most of them, are all people who pray and people who do Reiki and people who do all kinds of spiritual and alternative healing skills. So, you know, we're all learning from each other a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And, you know, if someone's not feeling so good, I know a bit about homeopathy, and I'm giving people tips about that. You know, we're sharing a lot while we watch and wait.
Right.
And just a lot of good stuff is going on there. And, you know, ideally when this is over with, as far as this monster that's on the loose, we'll find a way to use this gathering of energy for something even bigger. I have a sense that there is a purpose beyond what we're seeing right now. But it's that idea of everybody, you know, that we all belong to this common vision, this common tribe, and the energy that's started flowing there is very much about that.
Yeah, like
about
you said,
unity.
There's no mistakes and there's no coincidences. People are meant to travel on this earth plane, and I really do believe that certain people are meant to connect, and it is a small world when you think about, you know, the connections and who knows who and all of that. When you put it all together, it really is, I believe, closer than that 6 degree of separation that they talk about all the time.
And you want to hear a funny thing, taking it back to Janice.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Abby, you know, who's the woman who's had this trouble, Abby Condor, and these are her horses. And I said, I wrote this book about Janice, blah, blah, blah. And she said, you know, Janice was so special to me. She was my favorite. She was another one of those people that just went into this whole deal about how important Janice was. Then when we talked later, turns out she met her and that her mother knew her. And they lived, you know, in the old neighborhood in the Hate, where Janice, you know, on Fulton Street, they were hanging out where Janice and the Dead and the Airplane were. That's where she lived when she was a little girl. So,
wow.
It's so interesting how that came right around. And she says, oh, I sang and I tried. I wanted to be here. I wanted to be here so bad. She says, but I couldn't sing. And so, you know, and so here I am, you know, I show up at her place. She doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. And fortunately, she trusted me instantly. And she believed in these things, but, you know, she was skeptical. And as soon as she saw me working with the horses, well, she knew what was what.
She saw the differences in the horses after you had worked with them as well. So
yes,
probably helped a lot.
It did.
Well, we're going on to a little bit less than an hour and a half, so we probably want to close the show soon or whenever you want to stop talking. If you've got other things that you want to say, maybe you can clue us in. This is another topic that I didn't even think of asking you till just now.
All right.
What are some trends astrologically that are happening throughout the next year? Something that we might see in the news or a trend on how people are going to accept certain things? What's What do you think is the main things we should be looking for in the skies, basically?
Well, I can tell you a little bit, but because I've been so involved with the horses since the new year, I don't have all my ducks in a row to really do something that's really good on this, but I can say that this full moon in Leo coming right up on the 26th is going to be pretty intense. And that a lot of people, I've felt in the last few days, just more and more sensitivity. It's not going away, so to speak. It's getting more so. If you're psychic at all, you know, you're going to be going from 5 to 10. If you're just a little bit, you'll go from like 1 to 4. But everybody incrementally is being sensitized, and the communication is much, much stronger with each other instinctually. I'm a little concerned, I have to say, about the inauguration.
What do you see about that day? I haven't looked up anything to see if it's a void moon or anything like that.
Yeah, I have to look. I have to look it up, and because I think that there are some hard aspects on that day. I actually could just walk to the other end of the house and tell you.
Okay.
Because I'd rather do, you know, tell you the right thing than be half-assed about it. Feeling.
I definitely look at my ephemeris, but I just haven't been as regular as I would like to be, like actually gaze at it every couple of days, and then whatever pops out at me is something I usually will take that following week and focus on.
Uh-huh.
And I just haven't, I just haven't done that lately, and I really need to, I think being sick over the Christmas holiday has really just had me very behind on things that I need to do on a personal level and on a spiritual level, and just trying to get back in the swing of things with work. But yeah, I really see 2013 as like a year of reconciliation. I think I don't know what happened with 2012, except that so many people predicted so many different things. I think 2012 was a reawakening year for many people. And now it's reconciliation of ourselves with each other, with where we're at spiritually, with how we're going to exist and live. And many, many people say that this is a dying planet. Is it?
Well, you know, the planet's always dying and it's always living.
Right, right.
You know, we're in a process of transformation. There's no other way to see that.
Mm-hmm. And my thing is, I look at the numbers and I say, can we continue to live with this many people on the planet? Because I look at also the number, you know, the carbon number, and how many people are on the planet, and how many of us are using, you know, petrol and the other poisoning things on the planet. So it's going to have to be a radical shift in sensibilities and doing things like we've never done them before.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, that's the catch.
That's the catch. I mean, it was easy to be back in the, you know, 1100s, 1200s on the planet. There weren't that many people at that time. We weren't polluting the earth like we are now. But now with this many people, it's not a situation of going back into, you know, a lifestyle where we're growing our own food and not using cars and vehicles. There's too many of us to do those same things like we would have done hundreds of years ago.
However,
so now
what we have is the genius and the technology. Technology
right.
sometimes is stupid, and people do things just because they can, but it can also be used so wisely by people who are not only geniuses, but are oriented towards saving the planet.
Right. We have to find a way.
And we're
going to
see that.
Yeah, and I think that that's why this is the year of reconciliation. This is a reconciliation, our reconciliation with our fellow humankind and with the Mother Earth. And how are we going to do this thing? We have to come together to do it, because if we don't, it's not going to happen. We have to come together. And that's what I see 2013 being. I can't explain it any other way. It's just kind of like a knowing.
Well, yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, when you have so many of these earth changes and these disasters, I get thrown back to sitting in front of the stage at Woodstock and seeing you, Romney, get up there on the stage and say, "Hello, people. Well, they just call us a disaster area." Well, you know, there's always a little bit of heaven in a disaster area, and that's the truth. We see
yeah.
just the best in people fighting the poverty and the trouble with Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, wherever this happens with Katrina, you know, certainly we've seen the low life over there. And fortunately, I've just heard today how their good mayor is getting called on the carpet for all his theft and misappropriation of funds. Karma does deliver.
Yeah.
The good mayor of New Orleans is probably going to wind up in the can where he belongs. You know, as they say, you can fool the people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Now we see the light, stand up for your rights. And, you know, things are going to be turning. I think a lot is very, very mixed up. I don't think that what we expect is what we're going to see a lot of the time. But one way or another, people will be coming together. And we can't do it the old way. Nothing can be done the old way.
Right.
I was in the street in the 60s, and, you know, the fact is, you get a gun, you get a bomb, they have millions of them. That's not the way to fight. That's not the way to go. We have to change the world by not doing the violence and the things that have been leveled against us. We have to change things differently. And I believe we will.
I think part of it's spiritual. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the spiritual plays into all of this, because right now, you know, there's so many people that are just so desperate, and I really, you know, am seeing a lot of the devastation of people. You know, as I drive down the street here tomorrow morning, I'm going to be vending myself at a flea market, selling my personal belongings to make money. But I'm seeing people that are even more in a more bad situation than myself, selling their belongings on the side of the road. I mean, the simplest things, baby clothes, pots and pans, whatever they can sell. And that's the desperation of people. But what's really sad, too, is the mainstream media is not covering a lot of this. So many people don't even know that these things are occurring in our own country, which here it looks like third world on a Saturday morning. So this is an awakening. As much as I can try to help these people, I'm one of the lucky ones. I can afford a small space in an indoor flea market and set my things up. So as much as I can, I try to help them by maybe buying one or two items to fill up my booth with and keep that money circulating within our own community.
Well, we're going to be seeing more and more, not just the desperation of it, but the good of it, too,
yeah,
where communities are starting to talk to each other, where people who might not ordinarily...
one another. And somebody, you know, somebody was talking about the left-right paradigm the other day, and I said, you know what, it's the left-right paradigm is old, it's outdated.
Yep.
I don't want to talk about it anymore, because right now it's us, we the people, against them. And if you want to sit there and say there's a left-right paradigm, then what you're saying is, you know, this is like Civil War mentality. We don't have that anymore. The government is bad, they're wrong, and they're doing these bad and very wrong things to us. So, you know, there's only us and them. So let's forget the left-right. And everybody, of course, that was listening to me agreed. So I think people are starting to get that now. I think they're very, very slowly coming around. And we're not going to go forward until we drop that whole way of thinking. That's
well, I think one of the key things that's going to really help everybody turn around, and I think it seems very simple, but it's so key to our individual development, which will start to work in major ways, becoming your first place where you get your information. In other words, that you listen to your gut, that everybody start really listening intuitively. Okay, why do I feel like I absolutely need to go to the store and buy this, or I need to go call so-and-so? And then you do, and you find out why.
Right.
Because there's so much lying going on that at the core, we need to be our own center of gravity and our own first place of information.
We have a caller, Flash. Let me go ahead and pop them in here. Just a moment. Caller from area code 413. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, my name is Corrine. I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Okay, hi. How are you?
Hello.
I'm okay. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
Pretty good. Did you have a question for Flash?
Yes, and I just wanted to say that I think your show is fantastic. And it is good to know that there are other people who have the same mindset that I do, and we're not alone.
That's right.
And I wish that we could get together more to change things. I mean, but Flash.
Yes.
I love Janice.
Yeah.
I have loved her since I was a teenager. I still love her. What is she thinking about what's going on right now?
Well, I think she's at peace. I really do, generally speaking, in terms of her own evolution. I felt like when we were doing that singing at the Wise Women Festival that we actually finally sent her off the way she needed to be. Now, I don't mean to tell you that I haven't heard anything since then, because I have. I feel her wizened and calm, and that she kind of looks over things is the feel that I had from her, that she was finally at peace.
Right.
And that she was liking that.
Yeah. And, I mean, good for you for being part of that, you know?
Yeah, when we were singing and we saw her up on the roof of the building where we were playing, I feel things, and Omi, who sings with me at times, she sees a little bit more visually in the realm of things, but you could feel something major happening there. And I think the entire group of women who are singing and rocking and crying and chanting, that we sang her into a healed place.
Right, right.
Into a letting go of all the pain, finally.
Right.
And That's the best you can give.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, we're so lucky that she was among us at one time, and that we have this to appreciate her voice and her music still. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Janis.
Yeah.
And I appreciate
she shared a freedom with us.
Yeah.
She gave us permission.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you can do this too.
And you can be
at a point where no one was.
Yeah, you can be human and you can have a heart and soul and not be embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just, you know, I think about her a lot and, I mean, I'm not obsessed with her, but I absolutely adore Janis. And what I wanted to ask you, Flash, is that do you do shamanic work over the phone? Because obviously I'm in Massachusetts. I'm not sure.
Yes,
I think you're probably in California.
No, I'm actually in Florida.
Oh, okay. Now, would you do shamanic work over a long distance, or is it better to just be there with you?
Well, obviously some things are better. I do psychic work. I do astrology. I do animal communication over the phone. I can't do past life regression over the phone. Some shamanic work can be done. You know, it depends.
Right.
But I can certainly talk to people who aren't here anymore.
Right. Yeah, because I have a son that he's my son-in-law. He's just really in need of, you know, some kind of what I think a shamanic cleansing. He suffered abuse from his mom, his real mom, and for 11 years, and he needs to, you know. So, I mean, I'm thinking he probably needs a shaman to let go of this, you know, this guilt and this hatred and this, you know, the whole past. And I'm not sure if I'm right, but I think that's the only thing I can think of that might really help him.
Well, I tell you, why don't you get my phone number from the website,
okay,
and we should talk about this, you know, more offline.
Right, right, right. Okay. And you are you roundc7.com?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Her website is flashsilvermoon.com. So you
okay.
Spell that just like it sounded, Flash. Silver, SilverMoon. So that's like all one word, and then .com.
Okay.
And her number is very prominently displayed on her website, so you won't miss. Yeah.
Okay, that's fantastic, and I will contact you that way. In the meantime, thank you so much for doing this.
You're very welcome. I think you'll like the book. Check it out.
I'm going to, and you guys have a good night, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for calling.
For calling.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's great. We have callers, but we also, any of the shows that we do here on Wise Women Media are also archived forever on the on the Blog Talk Radio website. So
that's
that
wonderful.
Makes it hand to pass the link around or to refer to a show if you're trying to explain what you're doing. You can say, hey, you know, if you want to know more about it, listen to my show where I talked about this particular thing. So it's Blog Talk Radio is a great format for that. So
yeah, I like that. If people want to know more about the horses, that whole situation, your show last week, right?
The show last week, yeah. So to actually see the shows and get links back to the archives, you can go to Wise Women Media. posterus.com. So it's wisewomenmedia.posterous.com. And we also have a WePay link on there. So if you'd like to donate to the show to keep us on the air, you can do it through there. You can see our list of sponsors, how to get in touch with us, and even how to suggest a guest if that's something you would like to do. Anybody that's listening out there, you can always suggest a guest to have on the show.
The Woman Spirit Rising show on the same station on Tuesday night.
Right. On the same network, the Be Here or Here Be Monsters network.
Yeah. And that'll be from 7 to 8 o'clock Eastern Standard.
Yeah. So.
And our subject is going to be talking sort of roundtable style about our heroines, mentors, and those that keep the flame for us as individuals.
Oh, that's cool.
The women who really have helped shape us. And I thought that that would be a very interesting conversation. And to get everybody thinking of, who's really been inspiring them over the years.
Interesting. Very good. And our influences come from our mothers and our grandmothers, but so many other women come into our lives along the way that they all have a little hand in teaching us and guiding
mm-hmm.
us. And I know that I've had friends that have been older than me. I've had friends that have been very old souls that have been much younger than me.
Sure.
Which are, it's surprising how much I've learned from them as well. So and the learning process never ends. So
nope.
Anyway, we're going on to the last 15 minutes. Flash, did you have anything else to say to our audience before we close the show?
Well, I really appreciate being here. This has been very wonderful to be able to speak to you about these things. And, again, you can find anything else you want to know about me at flashsilvermoon.com, including how to get the book, Janice and Me, 40 Years of Music and Magic, as well as my tarot deck, The Wise Woman's Tarot. That's there as well. And if you're an animal lover, all kinds of good stories about that. You can find me on Facebook, friend me. There's tons of pictures. If you like pictures of animals and seeing someone who's actually working with them in their process, that's right there on my Facebook page, working with those horses, which I love, love, love. Working with the animals really is healing for me as well. And I think probably any healer who works with animals or people, there is that back and forth with the experience, really. And that's
what
we're here
for. Oh, wow, we have another caller.
Oh, good.
You want to take another question?
Sure, why not?
Okay, here goes. Hello, caller from area code 727. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, hi, Anita. This is Crow. Hello.
Oh, it's Crow. Hi, Crow. Did you have a question for Flash?
Well, actually, I want to make a just a few positive statements, if I may. First
sure.
of all, like our previous caller, thank you for all your efforts to both you and Flash. Hello, Flash.
Hi.
And, Flash, you used one of my favorite words. I love that word, tribe, and I wanted to thank you for putting that out there.
Oh, you're
and
welcome.
And the way that you... Anita, how many times have I said that word? We have to come down to the tribes, so it's going to have to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and one of the things too, how we're pointing out the need for change, and I do believe all of us feel that in our souls.
Yeah.
And sometimes we feel lost, and I just want to reiterate and pull anyone else who's not quite sure how to deal with that, what's going on, pull them into the understanding that you are not in this alone. We are this.
Right.
We are truly part of this wonderful sentient being.
Yes.
Feel yourself in that flood, in that air, in that earth. Feel yourself there and know that, yes, we know the things we should not be doing now and what, quote-unquote, the powers that be should not be doing. They're no more or less human than we are. And they are, whether they believe it or not, and we like to admit it, they are part of the tribe. They're just very lost, and they're lost
mm-hmm.
in the false fullness of themselves. So, but to get past that, to say, what can we do? Because it's not something that we're waiting for. It's something that's happening right now.
Yes.
And, one of my favorite, there's so many Occupy statements now with this new, the relatively new idea of the Occupy movement. My favorite is, occupy yourself one breath at a time. And in
mm-hmm.
doing so, you are occupying everything. And, you know, so, and what can you do? What sustainable thing can you do? Take a class. Learn how to knit. Cook a dish that you never cooked before from as much scratch as you possibly can. Understand it is work. It is effort. It's different. But it's a good feeling. It's fulfilling. And it's the truth. And that's really all I called to say. I want to support everything that you guys said. And, Flash, you speak as one of the wise women. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. If you like the word tribe.
Thank you, Pearl.
You're welcome, Anita.
And I hope you're feeling better.
I'm getting there. The cough is the last thing to go. I recently moved, Flash, and every time. Oh, and I'm sorry, you did ask where I'm calling from. It said a 727 area code, but I'm actually calling from North Carolina. I recently moved to North Carolina, and hoping this is my final destination, because the long distance moves are getting a little overwhelming. So, but Flash, you were gonna say something.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say the phrase that, as far as I know, I've made up. I call it raise the vibe for the tribe, and
I like that.
It's really easy to remember. And I think no matter what we're doing, from whatever sphere we're occupying, that's the thing, to keep the vibration high, to raise it in whatever you're doing. And if you're being around people, places, and things that bring you down, you're in the wrong place.
Yes.
And that we have to start with where we are and get our vibration moving to the positive. I can look over here and say, oh, that's horrible, that's horrible, that's horrible. Yep, I want to know what it is. I want to know that. But I don't want to sit in it. I don't want to focus on it. I want to keep raising the energy so that if I'm tackling these different things, I'm coming at it from a place of power and centeredness.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Well, I know you're wrapping up the show, Anita. I'm glad I got in these last few minutes. I wasn't listening to the entire show, but definitely wanted to give you a call and say hi and support you and everyone who's listening out there. So, you know, listen to the words these women say, and there is, you know, so much to be grateful for. And even every breath you take, if you take it with a positive feeling and a feeling knowing that you're stepping in to the next moment, feeling better, knowing that anything is possible. And, you know, Anita, you're asking about, you know, with the population, you know, how we manage. I have no doubt that it's possible. I think we just, unfortunately, have a lot of wrong answers, wrong solutions, but I think it's possible. I always believe where there's breath, there's hope, and, you know, I'll leave you with those words. So, and thanks for taking the time to do this show. It's a wonderful, meaningful thing, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Crow, for calling and for offering your wise women words, because you're a wise woman too. So,
absolutely.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Okay, and we'll talk to you. And we're going into the last 8 minutes, so
okay.
I want to thank.
I'll let you sign off and wrap it up. And I love you. Love you, Flash. Stay
love
positive
you too.
And love having you're my sisters. I love having you with the tribe.
Cool.
Love being part of the tribe. Bye bye.
All right, we're the Wise Women Tribe. I like that.
I like that too. Bye bye, dears.
Bye. So we're going into the last 8 minutes. Do you have any parting words, Flash, to tell the listeners?
Well, besides raise the vibe for the tribe, you know, each one of us is standing somewhere where some good can be accomplished. You know, I listened to the TV one morning and I wound up 2 weeks later still working with the healing of these horses. And hopefully the bringing to justice, letting this deviant find his karma quickly, and that no more harm befall any more of these animals. You know, that became my job until it's done. And so that was the directive. So I'm happy about that, and I'm happy to find myself living in such an time, tumultuous time, interesting time, as the Chinese might say, but we're all here together, and the more we get around that myth of isolation, the better off we're going to be.
Right.
We're here for each other. We're here to raise the energy of the planet. I feel anything is possible. We're going into different dimensions. The third dimension is dying. That is the change, in part, that's happening. And we're starting to anchor ourselves more and more into an energetic that is more circular than linear,
mm-hmm.
which has infinitely more potential for reviving itself. And
right.
we're moving towards the miraculous, where what we think can manifest much quicker than ever before. I mean, it's kind of an amazing... I was shocked myself today. Pandora was coming back in the house, and she had just picked up a bunch of garbage that someone had thrown in the street in front of the house, and she put it in the garbage. And she came in, and boom, I felt a horrible pain hit me right in the eye, just in one eye. And I knew it was nothing wrong with me, that it wasn't anything that I had. I knew it was something she brought in, so I'm questioning her, and it wasn't her at all. And I realized, I said, you know what? Somebody who was holding that garbage got hit in the face right out there in the street. And you picked up the garbage, you picked up the energy, and I felt it. Now, I'm not used to being that sensitive. I'm used to being very sensitive, but it just clued me in. We're going up some notches, Flash. And I think that's true for all of us. So don't discount what happens to you and you feel like, oh, that couldn't be. Because
right.
had I not put it together nice and quick, I wouldn't have understood what happened to me. I sprayed myself with the gem elixirs that I make. I made one called Golden Armor and another one called Aura Cleanse. There's many more, but I spritzed myself with those. And it was gone. Gone. And part of it was the spritzing, and part of it was the understanding of where it came from. Because when I do psychic work, and this has been forever, I pick up people's stuff. But if I can say, now, wait a minute, I didn't have an ache in my hand before I sat with that woman. As soon as I get it, it's gone. It
right.
doesn't stay with me. So I clicked into what happened, and it was gone. And so we don't need to carry some of the things that we pick up if we're sensitive, because we're getting more and more sensitive. So it's important to know that. Important. The gem elixirs I make are fabulous. You can find them at my website, and they'll clean you off really nice. Not as good, but if you have nothing but water, water will do you very, very well if you need a quick fix. And I imagine, Anita, with the kind of work you do, that you really need ways to cleanse.
Oh, I definitely can tell when I need it, too, because I just completely, I completely drain and feel
yeah.
completely drained.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard to recoup my energy, and I've been taking a lot of a couple new patients on, but not making a lot of money with everything that I'm doing. And so, when you've got a mishmash of those energies, it's really hard to get clear again. So
yeah
it's tough. It's very tough
in the karmic soup, as it were.
Yeah, and when I come home, I'm extremely tired. There's not much I can even do at home. I'm just too tired to do it. So
if
cooking
you can take a quick shower,
or cleaning house,
it'll
or
help.
Yeah. But we're going down to the last 2 minutes. So Flash,
all
I want
right.
to thank you again for being a guest on the show. I know we've been on probably 3 or 4 different times in the past.
So you're always welcome back whenever you have a topic that you need to discuss and get out, you know, to the world, per se.
Sure. Well, I love radio.
I think it's a great medium, and now that we're creating our own media, because our media doesn't tell the truth, it's amazing that we can still do this, so we need to utilize this while we still have it. But we'll be here next week, same time, for the Wise Women Media Radio Show on Friday nights at 11 p.m. Don't forget to go to Flash's site to check it out at flashsilvermoon.com. You see information about the ebook, about Janis Joplin and all of Flash's projects, including the mini horses in Marion County. And don't hesitate to get in touch with Flash through her website if you have any questions. And if you'd like to suggest a guest to me, get in touch with me at anitastewart@gmail.com or leave a message on our Wise Women Media Facebook page. So good night. Until next week, here be monsters for allowing us to broadcast on their network. And you all have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
Good night.